Friday night gentleman.
They've got something new now. It's called the press box.
You're back in the press box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank.
Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton, Tyler Scott, press box, ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM. Tyler's cussing at me behind the window. Thank God I can't hear him because I really don't care.
No, I was just saying that I was giving you the, that's me. I played the wrong one.
Yeah, but I wasn't going to sell you out until you started doing your best Charlie, what's his name from the Rockies?
Charlie Blackman?
Charlie Blackman, yeah. It's Angry Charlie Blackman on barbecue that gets mad at me in there. So he's still talking to me, but he's got the mic muted. So that's fine. He can do all he wants. Okay, look, we'll get back to some baseball. I want to get to this too because it's very, very in line with what we were talking about with Correa. And you and I brought this up the other day. We were talking about free agency and the Knicks and Kemba and all these other things. And I said, well, the one thing I hope the Knicks don't do, because I don't think he's worth it, is I hope they don't extend Julius Randle, especially at big dollars. Well, they didn't listen to me, and I don't know who they're listening to, but I might have some issue with whoever told me that it was the right thing to do. But the New York Knicks went out and did the unthinkable, in my opinion, and they extended Julius Randle 4 years and $117 million.
See, this is one of those days where I'm glad I surrendered my Knick fandom several years ago. I decided I was no longer going to support or root for a team that's owned by Jim Dolan.
And I agree with you.
Jim Dolan is a horrible person. And I will not give him a dollar. I will not pay attention. And as much as my heart may pull me back into just keeping an eye on the Knicks to see what's going on, watching them give Julius Randle nearly $30 million a year for 4 years, when how bad was he in the postseason? Now, granted, they didn't have any shooting.
He was awful, yeah.
They didn't have any shooting around him. And now with Kemba Walker and Evan Fournier, they'll have some shooting around him. Mm-hmm. But he's not a $30 million player. And
I've told you as much.
The Knicks overpaid for a tier three, tier four guy. And maybe that winds up being a deal that they move if they try to make a deal for a big-time player next year. Maybe that's a contract that gets moved. Because he's a good player, but he's not a star player. And, man, this is it's exact. You could not have been more prophetic with, they really should not give him a big deal. And then the very next day, it's almost like Jim Dolan heard you and said, oh, yeah, watch this. So
he's just a bumbling idiot. And look, again, the other thing that has to be considered is last year was one of those quirky years. And I told you that about the teams that ended up in the conference finals and thus the finals after that. It was a really strange year in that the best teams weren't involved in it due to injuries and the condensed season and everything else. But there was no Brooklyn, there was no Lakers, there was no Clippers because of injuries. And the Bucks and the Suns, to their credit, saw the door open, walked through it, took it as far as they could go. Milwaukee won a championship because of it. But I you look at it and you go, from a Knicks perspective, they're like the Sonics the year that they got off to such a hot start that they had home court in the first round, were a top four seed, and then just got hammered in the first round. You got to prove it over time that you can consistently do that. Sonics couldn't do it. I don't think the Knicks can do it either. I think the Knicks really were the hot team going into the playoffs last year. They had a phenomenal season. They had a season no one saw coming. Thibodeau did a fantastic job as well. But look at it going forward, in order to compete with Brooklyn and Philly and now Miami and Milwaukee, you're not a top four team. And you're going to be lucky to be a top six, probably lucky to be a top five, maybe a top six. Kemba's going to help if he stays healthy, but it's a big if. You know, Evan Fournier, is that a guy that is worth the money that they gave him? I'm not so sure. So, and the RJ Barretts of the world, it's not impressive to me. He's gotten better, but he's nowhere near what they thought he was going to be when he left Duke and was a top pick in the draft. I don't like who their best players are. I don't like the fact that if this is what they think that they can bank on in order to be a good team in the NBA competing for a title, I would disagree.
Everything went right for the Knicks last year, right? To finish 10 games over. Everything that could possibly go right did. Julius Randle was the comeback player of the year. And he averaged 24 points and 10 boards a game, which nobody saw that coming. Derrick Rose shook off the rust and averaged 15 points a game and wound up being a really important piece for them. And when they initially made that signing, I was like, no, don't do that. You're going to take minutes away from Quickly. You're going to hurt his development. And Quickly was pretty good. He had ups and downs like every rookie does, but he was pretty good. Reggie Bullock's a 3-and-D type of guy, and way too often last year they had to put the ball in his hands, and that didn't work. Elfrid Payton may as well have been unplayable against the Hawks.
And look,
in the postseason.
I get it. Their backcourt had to improve, and I don't think anybody wants to talk in depth about the Knicks. I'm just saying, from an overall NBA money standpoint, it's ridiculous. It's so ridiculous that you have a ridiculously run franchise, which is getting better in the front office, but until they change ownership groups, it's never going to be great. They just overpaid for a guy that's actually going to set them back more, that's going to help them.
I agree with that. And anytime you pay a guy coming off their best year, you know that they're not going to maintain that level of play. So you paid a guy based on, well, last year he was so much better, and then you paid him on that number. Kind of like what the Angels did with Anthony Rendon. They paid him off a career year with the Nationals where they went on to win a title, and he's never been that guy with those numbers. He's never going to be that guy with those numbers. Paying guys off career years is always the worst possible decision that you can make. Well, the Knicks just did that. A lot of teams do that in the NBA, but it's just because you just happened to mention that team, that player yesterday. It was almost like they did a hold my beer.
Yeah, and I just look, for as good as they've been getting and doing things to get to be relevant again, this is actually more of a setback than it is a win. And that's something that I'm focused on, that I wish more people would be paying attention to, because of the fact that this is not a positive, because of the amount of money and the length when you could have had money in free agency to go out and get somebody better.
Now, NBA free agency is a little weird, because I think we're seeing a new trend in the NBA. Like this year, there were all these potential free agents, but then they all wind up signing extensions. And if you look at the projected NBA cap, which is not expected to go up by a whole lot each of the next couple of years, it's almost like players and agents have wised to that and said, you know what, sign my extension, get my money, and then if things don't work out, I'll bitch my way out of here and force a trade. And like, there was that whole complicated sign and trade that the Wizards just did. It's like five teams. It's insane how like all these pieces move.
Mm-hmm.
The Wizards, I think, got the best of this deal for all the teams involved.
I agree.
But this is super complicated five-team, multi-sign-and-trade. How can we figure this out to stay under the luxury tax? All this weird stuff. Because the cap's is going to be kind of flat the next couple of years, the players aren't trying to go out on free agency, because if you go sign with another team, it's less than what you can get if you sign the extension. And then, all right, I'm not happy, trade me. I'll force my way through and put it on the team to have to find a way to make the salaries work and work out the picks or whatnot. And that's why we're seeing so many draft picks move. Draft picks are moving at record pace right now in trades. I've never seen first-round picks.
Well, because
the bad
are really bad, and they know that the only way to get better and be patient in the process is to get the draft picks. And the desperate teams that are trying to make sure that they stay relevant and while the window's still open a little bit, try and compete for it, are in desperation mode too.
They're just surrendering everything.
Yeah.
So it is a very unique situation where it looks like, say in 3 or 4 years, we could have a flip-flop of an awful lot of teams from bad to good, good to bad, because the bad teams are going to have multiple first-round picks every year. And the good teams, they're not going to have any damn picks. And you saw how this worked out with the Rockets. They never had a pick. Well, eventually, your roster ages out, and you keep swapping a pick for a lesser player. Okay, this guy can help me for 1 year, then they walk. This guy can help me for 1 year, then they walk. And you wind up with a bunch of guys from your G League team, a bunch of guys who just bounced around the league, and your one or two good players. That all falls apart eventually. Maybe a lot of teams are going to feel what the Rockets felt.
All right, We can continue to have that conversation as we move forward. You've got a message for the peeps before we get to the break. The Rockets, we have some good news in terms of the young players, draft picks, and things you're talking about, too, on the other side. We'll get to that, but before that, here's this.
Hey, let me tell you about carsforkids.org. You know that old car that's sitting in your garage, not going anywhere because it's missing half the parts of its engine? Or the one in your driveway that's a rust bucket and you're constantly dumping money into it because you're trying to find, okay, am I gonna keep repairing? Am I finally going to get a new vehicle? Well, maybe that vehicle doesn't have any value. Maybe you can't sell it on the street. But what you can do is you can donate it to carsforkids.org. They accept all vehicle donations, cars, motorcycles, trucks, any condition, running or not. And when you donate your vehicle, you get a full tax write-off for your donation. And if you mention ESPN Houston, they'll even give you a $50 Visa gift card. Can't find the title? No worries. They do all the title work for you, and pickup is free. Your donation benefits Houston Can Academies, helping to give local Houston kids a second chance at a diploma. So go to carsforkids.org or call 713-225-4226. 713-225-4226. Donate your vehicle. Get the write-off. Write off the car, not the kid.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
That's right. You heard the man. It's me and Pat and Tyler till 4. Going to mix it up a little bit here for you. Got another opportunity for you to win two tickets to the Texas Trophy Hunters Association 45th Annual 2021 Hunters Extravaganza, NRG Center, August 6th through the 8th. Going to take caller 12 right now, 713-780-3776. Caller 12, 713-780-ESPN. You get two tickets to see the latest deer hunting equipment, technology, hunting accessories, clothing, rifles, knives, archery, all the gear, fun for the family. Kids can see all the live alligators and snakes. Free admission for active military, veterans, police, and first responders. It's the granddaddy of all Texas hunting shows, and it's back at NRG Arena. If you don't win the tickets, huntersextravaganza.com, caller 12, good luck. So we'll have one more pair of tickets we're going to give away for that in the 3 o'clock hour. Hopefully you guys that really want to go win them. And if you're not going to go, then don't try and win them. How about that, Patrick?
Hey, look, I'm looking forward to going out and checking out all the archery stuff. My son's really big into archery, so I've gotten big into archery. And I'm definitely into going and checking out
that William Tell stuff? Apple off the dome piece? Or
you know, when we first moved down here.
Is that who that shot the apple, William Tell? Okay.
When we first moved down here, my son was in Scouts. And Scouts down here is so much different and so much better than it was in New York. There's way more adventure, high adventure, camping, like real scout stuff versus in New York where it just wasn't anywhere as good. And when we first moved down here, he took very well. They went on a summer trip. They were gone for like a week and they did archery. And they had this event where, you know, all right, whoever nails the watermelon, you know, you win the watermelon and you're the, you know, archery champ. My son reached back, first shot, and drilled it square in the middle, first time he'd ever held a bow.
Your son's a big fan of drilling melons?
Drilled the melons.
Nothing wrong with that. Setting him up for a lifetime of fun, Pat.
Yeah, it is. and he nailed it. So he won the melon, and he's like, okay, well, you win.
So he drilled the melons and then nailed it?
And then nailed it. So after that...
How old is he at the time?
10.
Oof.
Got started early. So
my goodness.
The whole rest of the camp that they were out there... He's, you know, they went and they found some different things to make his targets. And he was just shooting arrows all over the place. And he just took very naturally to it. So he came home and the first thing we did is I went and bought him a bow and arrow and a target and all this stuff. And he's gotten really good at it.
That's
and
great.
Because of that, you know, I learned how to shoot a bow and arrow. It's a lot of fun. And I'm definitely looking to check it out because he's asked me for a new bow.
You get into the really high-tech ones at a certain point.
Yeah, and that's about where, I mean, he's going to be 17 in 2 weeks.
Okay.
So he's ready to move up to kind of a high-tech bow. I'm looking forward to checking it out. It's going to be fun.
That's good. And you're going to be out there for a couple hours as well, so people can go out and see Pat and chop it up with him as part of the extravaganza. So we'll have one more pair of tickets we're going to give away in the final hour of the program. So there you go on that front. From a Rockets front, I wanted to make sure you guys got the latest and the greatest, because at least we don't have to worry about a summer league that won't involve Jalen Green, the top overall pick of the Rockets, second pick in the draft. As the Rockets announced yesterday, they signed Green to his contract, so he will be eligible for the Vegas Summer League August 8th through the 17th. He's only 19. He is ready to go, and he is going to be signed, sealed, and delivered. Now, they still have three other picks to get to, but the most important one was obviously Jalen Green and getting him on the court and getting him in Summer League and getting as many reps as he possibly can. So good news if you're a Rockets fan that he is in the fold.
Whole reason for me to watch Summer League this year.
Absolutely.
Is the Rockets have a kid who could be a legit star in this league very soon. I want to see him play. There's only so many times you get to see G League games. You know, you could catch a highlight here or there, but I want to be able to actually watch him play for extended periods. And I'm excited because Jalen Green can fill it up. And you know, he didn't play in college. He didn't play against kids his own age. He played in the G League against former veterans in the NBA who want to get back into the NBA, guys who don't want to get shown up by young kids, and he was showing them up. So I want to watch him play. I am actually excited. This draft, man, I can't say enough good things about Rafael Stone here. This draft has me excited about the Rockets. I haven't been excited about the Rockets in a year.
Okay.
So I'm actually excited about the Rockets again, and Jalen Green is probably 80% of that.
Well, and you know what? It's always been that way. And when I was normally a lot of times that they would have our league meetings would be centered around Summer League in Vegas. And I would, whether I had to take a cab or whether other people were interested or not, I was over at the Thomas and Mack Center every night because I wanted, that was when you could see LeBron playing in a Summer League game. You could see some of the top picks in the draft playing in Summer League games, and it's exactly why everybody should watch the Summer League. There's two reasons why. You could find the young players that were just drafted trying to find their way. So you can see some of the top talent in the country from a year ago up close and personal, because really there's not a bad seat in the place and you can move all around to get as close to the court as you possibly want. And secondly, you get the success stories, and two of them in particular that come to mind, Kent Bazemore, but more importantly, Rudy Gobert. These were guys that were forgotten about or never going to get the right opportunity kind of guys that were journeymen that were playing in the Summer League. And all of a sudden, they caught fire at the right time. They caught someone's eye, and they ended up being big pieces of someone's puzzle and ended up getting big dollars in the case of Gobert and even Bazemore. So those are some stories that also end up emerging from Summer League. So that's why it's fun to watch. I noticed that one started in Sacramento the last couple of days, and it's the Kings, the Warriors, the Lakers, and the Heat. It's a really eclectic mix of four teams playing in Sacramento. Those are not games I'm excited about. And believe me, having watched a little bit of it, no one should be excited. It was bad basketball. But when you get to Vegas and you get to Salt Lake and some of those summer leagues, you're talking about some good competition.
And I apologize. I did not have a G League pass this year. I know I failed. I probably disappointed all of you. But this is a summer league I'm interested in watching. There's been plenty of summer leagues that I haven't really been interested in watching. Jalen Green getting out there. And you're right. Sometimes you find guys who fall through the cracks. And it's probably easiest in basketball to fall through the cracks because smallest rosters, shortest draft. You know, you could be a good player who just never catches the right eye. And you know, you just mentioned a few of them. But when you have a guy who is projected to be a big-time player, all eyes are going to be on Jalen Green. And if you're on the Rockets summer team roster, maybe you're one of those guys who hasn't gotten a chance to catch the right eyes. Eyes are now going to be there because of Jalen Green. Your time to shine. If you're playing the other team that has the big-time prospect, well, your time to shine.
Here's another angle to keep in mind. If indeed Jalen Green played against grown men because he was playing in the G League, this should be his stage more than any other draft pick to excel up head and shoulders above all these other kids that were drafted, because he wasn't playing against kids his own age. He was playing against grown-ass men. So he has the chance now to prove this is why you go to the G League as opposed to a one-and-done situation in a college environment.
100%.
That's going to be big.
And the other kid who got drafted in the top 10 from the G League, same thing.
Kid with Golden State.
So, yep. And this is...
Kuminga.
This is a big deal for the G League, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's the first time they've had multiple, you know, you got multiple top 10 picks. You know, the number two overall pick is a G League guy. So this is a big deal for that G League Ignite program. If they have two of the guys with the top 10 draft picks, so essentially we're talking about, hey, two of the top 10 rookies coming in are coming out of the G League. These are guys who didn't go to college. They went to the G League. They made some cash. They go out and they ball out in summer league. All these other kids who are sitting, oh, I'm getting recruited by this school, that school, this school. Wait, these guys went to the G League. They were top picks.
Didn't have to go to Europe.
They made money.
And they got 500 grand.
And they got drafted high. Maybe that's my role. Look, that has always been, going as far back, I guess it's like, you know, what, 4 years now, when LeVar Ball was talking about his JBL and paying kids, and he never had the backing to do it. But the idea made a lot of sense. If you can get the top recruits and they can make money, and even if it was 100 grand, as opposed to, you know, them playing in college and having school isn't for everyone. A lot of these kids, they're not going to college to play ball. They're going to play ball at a college, and they're not interested in, you know, what my grades are going to be. All I'm trying to do is make sure I pull my 2.0 so that I'm eligible. And if at the end of the season, my grades fall off, well, the season's already completed. It's not like they can kick me off the team. So this is a really big deal, and we could see, you know, based on A, the draft, and then B, the summer league, we could see a lot more of the top recruits say, you know what, I'm gonna go get my money in the G League. How much does NIL now?
Well, that's going to be a factor, right? That could change the entire landscape back a little bit towards college, because now it's capped out for G League participants, and there's only so many that are going to get the offer at 500 grand. If you're going to tell me that you're going to start raking in the kind of money that Alabama's quarterback already has, and a lot of these NIL deals are starting to serve up, then it might enhance people to more players to go one and done again. So we'll see. But Jalen Green is a guy. Look, I gave Rafael Stone credit on draft night, and I don't want to take that away. You got four 19-year-olds. You're embracing the rebuild. You're finally embracing a situation that you weren't willing to previously, in that you're going forward on a complete rebuild and you're not a championship caliber team anymore. Now, the other thing is these picks have to pan out. I'm not so sure about Christopher. The reason why they took Christopher is because he was the best friend of Jalen Green, but he is raw. And I watched him play at Arizona State, and he has a lot to work on. But the other two kids are going to be role players. They're not going to be stars per se. But if one can be a defensive stopper and the other one can be kind of your center of the future, then you did really well. Now, the draft is potential. So I think he did well in drafting the right guys, the right age, the right mindset, the right kind of personalities to fit this organization. Now you just got to see if they pan out.
And, you know, to me, if you can find a guy who's got a high motor on the defensive end and he can guard multiple positions, can you teach that kid to shoot?
Well, I can tell you two examples of how you can teach a kid to shoot. Gary Payton and Jason Kidd. They came into the league without a jump shot. It was broken. It was a 25-letter alphabet. There was no J in sight. They were struggling. And Tim Gergovich changed both of them. And look, you want more recent history, Markelle Fultz. Lonzo Ball.
Lonzo Ball,
right,
big one.
Right.
You know, so if you can teach a kid who's hyper-athletic and can guard a bunch of different positions and has one of those crazy defensive motors, if you can teach that kid how to knock down a three, he's an important player on a team right now.
Right, because God, you know, GMs and coaches can't teach height and athleticism. They can teach guys that have that from God's gift to be able to turn them into basketball players. But they can't tell a kid that's got all the tools in the world that they need to teach you up to be 7 foot tall or 6'6 with a wingspan. So the fact that you get these kids that have the skill set in the athleticism, the size, and the strength, now you can start working them on the fundamentals of, I need to teach a kid how to shoot or defend. Because in the case of the Rockets, both Green and Christopher have to learn to defend. And that's something that coaches are going to have to step up and work on them.
I think with Green, that's, and that's something he's addressed.
He said he wants to.
He said he wants to be a top defender. If you can have that, I want to be a top defender. Meanwhile, I'm going out and I'm dropping 25 a night. Like I said, I think that Green really has a lot of potential. I think he could be their next star.
It's going to be fun to watch.
I want to watch him. Every single game, I want to watch that kid play.
There you go. So that's coming up. Summer League's getting underway this weekend, so put that on your radar for things to do. On top of that, one of the things you might want to do is if you just don't have the energy you once had and you can't stay up as late, you can't do the things you used to do, you need to get in touch with the people at Apollo Men's Health. For men and women, they have hormone therapy, which can get you feeling like you felt in your heyday when you were really on top of your game. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, they can get you feeling like you thought you could never feel again. Your health is your wealth, and if you invest in yourself and you reach out to Apollo Men's Health, they're going to take care of you every step of the way. For both men and women, it's the hormone therapy. If you want to start a workout plan, they're going to be able to help you with that too, starting with a full body composition analysis that literally only takes a minute and gives you data that can really be useful in getting you on the plan that you need. You can also recover quicker with HGH peptide therapy and so many more options for you. But the main thing you do is set up the first appointment. Go to ApolloMH.com, and you're going to find out most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders, and then let the process go from there. Show up and talk honestly to Dr. O and his staff. And when you give them the right answers and the honest answers, they're going to give you a program that's going to get you results. They're great people doing great things. Two locations near downtown Houston to better serve you. Check them out today. It's Apollo Men's Health.
Get low when the whistle goes.
Real fun. Get low when the whistle goes. Sports. ESPN 97.5. This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
That's the plan. 90 in the books, 90 still to go. Second half of the show right now on the Press Box, ESPN 97.5, 92.5 FM. Pat, Tyler, and myself, as the man just told you, as we've been talking about a whole lot of stuff. One thing we haven't said yet that we need to address, and I've told you guys this before, even growing up in Milwaukee, Wisconsin, J.R. Richard was one of my favorite players of all time growing up. J.R. Richard was the man. J.R. Richard is the reason why for my birthday one year I had to have that rainbow Astros jersey, and I wanted 50 on the back of it because J.R. Richard was the dude. And J.R. Richard passed away today. Or last night, I'm sorry, and they announced it. The news got out today. RIP to James Rodney Richard, but set down by a stroke that he never recovered from enough to be able to play Major League Baseball again. But one of the most dominant for a short window of time pitchers that baseball has seen, dies at 71. It's the unbelievable American story because as successful as he was in baseball, then he suffered the stroke. Then we found out that he was struggling and living under an overpass somewhere in Houston. And then the Astros got involved, and other people got involved. And then he started getting treated the way he should be treated and should have been treated as a legend of the game and one of the greatest in Astros history. And that's how he kind of was able to then stay in terms of the eyes and the hearts of Astros players. So the fact that James Rodney Richard passed away at 71 is a loss for all Astros fans.
You know, for four straight years, he had at least 18 wins. And in two of those years, he had back-to-back 300-plus strikeout seasons. In fact, it was his record, 313 strikeouts, that Gerrit Cole broke in 2019, Astros' single-season all-time strikeout record. And when you look at his 1979 season, which is probably his greatest season as a pitcher, 29 years old, he was 18-30, had 2.71 ERA, was the best in baseball that year. Also led the league with 313 strikeouts. He threw 292 innings, which was the second highest in baseball, and he had 19 complete games. It is a crime against baseball. He did not win the Cy Young in 1979.
That's crazy.
He led the league in ERA, led the league in strikeouts. He had 19 complete games. Bruce Sutter, a reliever
pitcher,
won the Cy Young in what can only be described as a crime against baseball. And to make matters worse, he wasn't even second. He was third behind teammate Joe Negro.
That's ridiculous.
And look, Joe Negro he was 21-11. He had a higher ERA. He had 8 less complete games. He pitched 30 less innings. He gave up more hits. He gave up more runs. And he struck out like 200 guys less.
As Joe Morgan said, he had the greatest stuff I have ever seen, and it still gives me goosebumps to think of what he might have become.
He threw 100 miles an hour in 1979.
I always think of, you know, because they always talk about like Johnny Bench and other guys that could hold all the baseballs in their hand. But he was such an intimidatingly dominant force on the mound, just in the way he looked. But then he would hold, he could hold like 11 baseballs in his hand or something like that.
Well, think about it from this perspective. Like Randy Johnson is the guy that we would look at in this era who was 6'10". And by the time he's taken his stride and released the baseball, 60 feet 6 inches is probably about 53 feet. And Randy Johnson threw 98 miles an hour. J.R. Richard was 6'8". By the time he took, and remember back in the 70s, those guys took monster strides. They didn't have the more compact deliveries guys have now. J.R. Richard took a huge stride, had a big kick, and he's 6'8". By the time he released the ball, was it 53, 52 feet? Oh, and it's coming 100 miles an hour? What do you have, 150 milliseconds to make a decision to swing?
8 baseballs in one hand, J.R. Richard.
It's unbelievable. I mean, I can hold 3.
And max. He didn't get into the whole world Guinness Book of World Record stuff, and other guys have done it. A lot of guys have done 7, but it's just kind of to back up and echo what you were saying about just the dominating force from the size of his hands to his height at 6'8", to the way that he brought it at you in such a rapid and intimidating fashion that it was as good as Nolan Ryan was. Nolan Ryan was still graceful with the high leg kick and the way he went about his business. JR was violent in the way he delivered the baseball, but it's just a travesty that we never were going to ever be able to see what that career could have been without the stroke.
And this is the horrible part of it is 1980, he was an all-star. He was actually pitching better than he did in 79 when he should have won Cy Young.
Right.
He was 10-4 with a 190 ERA. He had 119 strikeouts.
Where would he be in the all-time strikeout record? Where would he be in terms of wins and Cy Youngs and all the things? He was as dominant as any pitcher, maybe in any era, but particularly in his era. For as good as, like you said, Negro on his own team was, or other pitchers were across baseball, there was no one that had the intimidation and the size and the strength and the domination when he threw a fastball at you like J.R. Richard, other than maybe Nolan Ryan.
He wasn't even like a full-time major leaguer until he was 25 years old. And even with that, you figure if he would have, and I'm not saying he would have struck out 300 guys every year, but if you just put his average numbers together and put another 5-6 years on there, he's, what, 3,500 strikeouts?
Yeah.
That's a Hall of Fame career.
No doubt. No question about it. So RIP to an Astros legend. He was part of that inaugural class of the Astros Hall of Fame, which was great, and he was able to participate. But another Astros great gone, as J.R. Richard is gone at 71 years old. So we want to make sure that we did right by J.R. and for our love of baseball and gave him his due there. So tip one for old J.R. today because he deserves it. All right, we're going to continue to roll on with the program. We have lots more to get to. The Texans back at it today on the field as Deshaun is not. There was a rumor, and I say rumor because it's being questioned over and over again, that Deshaun and the subject of Deshaun was a hot topic amongst the Texans and another team talking trade, and that they were progressing. We can talk about that when we come back, because there's some people that say, not so fast. And then there's Deshaun that says, owie. So lots to get to as we continue to roll on with our number 2 of the program. It's Press Box ESPN.
Well, hello.
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN.
Dial the phone.
Disappointed by your HR and payroll technology? Maybe you need to outsource your administration. Go to HRP.net to learn more.
You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Patrick Creighton.
All right, rolling through hour number two, three-hour extravaganza. And we paid our homage to James Rodney Richard in the last segment. Ray wants to get in here before we switch gears on anything else. Talk about the legend. Ray, what's going on?
What's going on, Joel? I actually met J.R. Richard about 10, 15 years ago. After baseball, he had started preaching, actually. And a lot of things that he dealt with in his life growing up and through baseball and everything, he would share to try to help other people. One thing that I never forget about him is the size of his hands. He went to shake my hand, and of course, I'm 6'2", and I have nice size hands, but his hands swallowed my hands up. And just to have an opportunity to sit and talk with him, he was such a nice guy and very personable and very warm and open. And he spent the rest of his life preaching and spreading the gospel and just trying to help people, you know. And so J.R. Richard would truly be missed. He would truly be missed. He was a great man. That's all I got, Joe. Thanks, man.
Appreciate it, Ray. Appreciate the story. Didn't know that Ray and Tyler have something in common. They have nice big hands, but James Rodney Richard did too. And like I said, a sad day if you're an Astros fan. He's a legend in so many ways. And like I said, I was a massive fan of his growing up. And it's a shame that we never would get the opportunity to see his career play out with the dominant skills, like you said. And it wasn't like a guy that was only going to go like four or five, six innings and then peter out. This was a guy that finished what he started. This is a guy that was dominant with double-digit strikeout games and put all of the different factors right there on the table every night he took the mound. So, and like I said, and then even the story after baseball. People didn't know where he was. It's kind of like the 30 for 30 documentary when they couldn't find Benny Anders. And my buddy Lyndon Rose and one of his teammates were searching all over the country for him, and they found him. This was even more of a story because when they did find him, he was homeless and living, like I said, under an overpass here in Houston. And to see the outpouring of love and support, and for those that remembered him and loved him when he was a player, to just what he meant to Houston and how everybody kind of, the outpouring of support led to kind of a resurrecting of his life to where he could try and preach the gospel, as the caller Ray said, about trying to help others, but also how appreciative he was of how the Astros honored him and brought him back and treated him as a legend to represent the franchise. That was a great story, man.
And you think about his career, right? From 76 to 79, so for a four-year period, he was arguably the most dominant pitcher in baseball. He made 39, 36, 36, and 38 starts, and then had 14, 13, 16, 19 complete games. He threw at least 267 innings all 4 years. This was back in the days of four-man rotations. So before baseball got into the whole five-man, this guy was taking the ball every fourth day.
Yeah.
And going nine. And throwing a ton of pitches because he walked a ton of guys. He led the league in walks three times. He walked a ton of guys, and he struck out a ton of guys. So you knew he was throwing probably 130, 140 pitches every night and going back out there every fourth day, bringing it 100 miles an hour. That's an arm blessed by God. And to have the way his career ended because of the stroke, I mean, it really is one of the tragic stories of sports. And then, like you said, it's to find out he's homeless and living under an overpass to go from.
Well, as you said, Pat, it's like he had God-given abilities that were above most, but then he also had a whole lot of bad luck thrown his way.
Yeah.
Worse than most.
And, you know, to fall that far down, to imagine being on top of the world and then it's all ripped out and you fall so far down the hole, you're literally at the bottom of the world. And then out of nowhere, your former team comes back to lift you back up.
Yeah.
I mean, it's an incredible roller coaster ride that has a great highs, but it also has the worst lows. I don't think I'd wish that on anyone. To go through the fall, even though his career, the short career was great, and his, you know, kind of being brought back by the Astros was a very touching thing. Mm-hmm. But to have to go through what he did.
It would be an interesting discussion to have if you could have another conversation with him to say, was it all worth it if you went through everything that you went through with the highs and the lows, or would you have been more satisfied and grateful to just have the average life but not have the great variation between on top of the world in 79 to rock bottom several times?
It's like a Shakespearean tragedy.
It really is. So, again, rest in peace to a great one in J.R. Richard, 71 years old, died last night. So we'll continue to move on to other things. We talked a little bit about the NBA. Look, Texans, again, practiced today. That wasn't the news of the day because, again, Deshaun Watson is not on the field. And I, like I said, I don't think he should be. But now you've got all this ludicrousy that's out there that everybody's saying, well, the Eagles and the Texans are in discussions in a trade for J.R. Richard. For Deshaun Watson. And some news outlets and rumor mills have started saying, it could happen within 48 hours. I got Eagles fans hitting me up all over the place. This is happening. This is exciting. And then you start getting the reality check of other people that have their ear to the grindstone and know what's going on out there going, this isn't even close. This is not even close. It's just another way that the Deshaun Watson's whole stupid soap opera is overtaking anything else that could possibly happen with this franchise. Until he's gone, it's going to continue to happen, but it's a travesty because the season is upon us. I mean, I know they're not going to be good, but even for the players in that locker room, it's like, come on, man, can we talk about people that are going to be here?
I think it's really interesting that as the last couple of days, as these reports have gotten hotter and hotter about, well, who's still looking at Deshaun, who's still monitoring Deshaun, who still wants to trade for Deshaun, that, you know, after that, then, well, you know, Deshaun's legal team is making preparations for a potential grand jury. Well, of course they are. He's facing 10 potential criminal events. There are 10 criminal complaints filed against him. There's no charges against him. But as our buddy Steph Stradley pointed out on social media the other day, a grand jury would only be convened for felony charges.
Right.
So at that point, they would have – he'd go before the grand jury and there would be, you know, testimony to decide whether or not there's enough evidence to go forward with a potential felony charge. Now, we don't know that grand jury is ever coming. That grand jury might not come for 6 months. We don't know. We haven't seen Deshaun get called in to HPD to go be interviewed. We haven't seen them.
We knew last week it was 8 going to 10, and because there were two new ladies, women,
yes,
that were being questioned by HPD.
So they're still talking to, you know, the complainants. They haven't really gotten to Deshaun yet. That doesn't mean that, oh, there's a grand jury inquisition imminent. It means that at some point there could be one, mm-hmm, because there's 10 complaints. So his legal team would be remiss if they were not preparing for what eventually could happen. You have to cover all your bases. That's their job. It doesn't mean next week he's going before a grand jury. it just comes out there as, well, you know what? There's all this talk about maybe they'll move Deshaun. Let's dump some water on this. It's not like this is breaking news or something that wasn't expected or wasn't normally part of the plan. This is just the logical progression of things. And the idea of, well, you know, teams have to make sure he wouldn't be going to jail. This is the whole reason why these charges, the teams are hesitant to give things
that's
up.
That's what I've said all along.
And unless you're going to get him on the cheapy cheap, which I think is the whole reason why we have these, you know, the Eagles are watching, the Panthers are watching.
Broncos, Dolphins.
They're looking to see if the Texans blink.
Well, Pat, look.
And they say, look, we'll give him up for like one pick in a playoff.
No, but okay. Let's be realistic. Of all the teams that we've mentioned, of all the teams, because we say how unrealistic it is and how much I've been preaching over and over again, no general manager's putting his ass on the line and making a trade for a guy and giving up the, you know, future picks and assets to realize that it may never come to fruition, because just all it takes is one case to go all the way through and see him do any kind of time.
Yeah.
And they could be in trouble. But on top of all that, the only team realistically that at least talk trade with the Texans right now is a team that has two first-round picks next year, regardless of where they're going to be. You know they're not going to be a good team. Jalen Hurts is in his first year trying to be a starting quarterback, never done it before. Their roster isn't great. They're in the worst division in football. So at least that's a team that you're not looking at going, well, if the Broncos got a quarterback, everything else around that team is pretty damn good. Well, the Panthers aren't great, but they do have Christian McCaffrey and some other things, and Matt Rule's been a decent first year in terms of starting to put talent together. They might be okay. The Dolphins look like they could be teetering on a playoff spot. So you don't want to be that if you're the Texans. The one team that at least has the picks, and now because of the Carson Wentz situation, it doesn't look like they're going to have the possibility to have three first-round picks, probably two, unless he does miraculously recover from the surgery. But that's the one team you talk to because they got multiples for this coming draft when you really need them.
Also, let's keep in mind, the Eagles and the Panthers are in the other conference. That's attractive. If you're going to move a star, get him out of your conference. You don't want that guy impeding your way if at some point you do turn the franchise around. Or whether you do or you don't want to see him go into a Super Bowl with another team in your conference. So the teams that you got to see more often, send him to the other conference. Maybe you'll see him once every 6 years. So go play with the Eagles. Go play with the Panthers. I don't have to see you very often.
Well, and that's also why, from when the Packers traded Brett Favre, they sent him to the Jets. That's why, if you have a falling out with a player, that's where you want them to go, so you don't have to see the payback front and center. As in the case of Favre, he couldn't wait to get back into the division when he could get away from the Jets, so he could get to the Vikings, so he could play the Packers twice a year and stick it to them as much as he possibly could. That's what the player wants to do. Believe me, if D-Hop had it his way, he'd love to be in a team in the AFC South so he could stick it to. Don't think Andre Johnson didn't think a little bit about if he was going to, with his next team, the fact that with the Colts, he had a chance to go back to NRG and play the Texans twice and tell them to stick it a little bit too.
Revenge is a big deal with players. Players take all the contract stuff and they take all that stuff very personally.
No doubt.
And even if you have a GM who tries to look, it's just business, I'm players, it's not just business for them. It's their life. So they don't separate money and what's personal. They always take it personal. If you're not going to pay me, you're disrespecting me.
And if you don't want to hear it from me, this is exactly the words of Pro Football Talk, which you've heard me say before. But they said the problem at this point, and dispelling all of these rumors that a trade was imminent and that it was progressing between the Eagles and Texans, as Watson's camp believes, the evidence against him is inevitably going to be presented to a grand jury. If he's indicted on felony charges, the NFL undoubtedly will place him on the paid leave until the case is resolved. And until then, it is possible he'll be convicted and then incarcerated. And as one source explained, teams have to wait to make sure jail isn't a possibility. And although Pro Football Talk points out, a few of the women who have accused Watson of wrongdoing have alleged forcible sexual misconduct, though it looks like most of them are going to remain civil, it only takes that one allegation, if it becomes an indictment and turns into a conviction, to screw this whole thing up for not only the rest of his life and his football career, but for any team interested in trying to trade for him.
And once this becomes potentially a criminal case, there's no timeline on how long that goes. If that case takes 2.5 years to play out, and then he had to do a couple of years. And you're talking about a five-year window that he might not play.
And you might never be the same, right? For as much as he's highly regarded, and they thought at the start of this process before all these cases came up when it was just him asking for a trade, they said it could be the biggest haul that any team has ever gotten to trade one single player. Now, if you look at it, and when Michael Vick had to sit out for a long extended period of time, he was never the same player again.
If Deshaun misses more than 1 year, it's going to have a big impact.
Yep. No doubt. All right, two in the books, one to go. Final hour of the show comes up next. Keep it right where you got it. Locked and loaded on the Press Box, ESPN.
You're listening to ESPN 97.5.
I don't blame it, Don.